dust is starting to settle on the announcements of yesterday. I think the emotions will still be raw. There's mixed messages out there. I think we'd probably need to evaluate how we've got to the situation we have and the implications that has, not just for the club, but the city and the sport as well. And then we've got to look forward and say, where on earth does Bradford go from here with its rugby league team?
Well, I mean, it's one of the most iconic clubs in World Rugby League, Bradford and the Bradford Bulls. And was this a shock, Phil, or do you think it was just a matter of time before this liquidation happened?
I think the way it happened, it is a shock. 50 days of continually extending deadlines hinted that there were people out there that were putting together bids that were going to buy the club one by one. They fell by the wayside. But even the day before, I think the jungle drums from Red Hall were saying, we've got people who are interested. There were always three parties involved in this negotiation, so it was going to take something special to satisfy all of those. There was the lease owned by the governing body. There were obviously the creditors represented by the administrator. And included in that is the HMRC, who we know, obviously, you know, whether it's sport or business, they have obligations that they're not just going to accept bids. There are ratifications of things that they need. So I think it was always going to be difficult to pull the parties together. But right up until the night before, there was a confidence that there was going to be a knight in shining armour that was going to take them on. So I think around about midday yesterday to start hearing that actually the final bidder had decided not to proceed and that the only possible option then was liquidation and the finality of that word more than anything else. I think it did come as a shock. That doesn't mean it's the end, but it does mean that it's certainly the end of an era, the end of an icon, and also calls into question, I think, the initial aims and objectives of Super League when it was founded in 1995. The absolute epitome of what was intended was Bradford, the Bull Mania, the fact that a major city took on moving to the summer, the entertainment principle that went all around that, the regeneration of a ground that had been cold and inhospitable in the winter to one of the places to be during the summer, crowds of up to 25,000, which again was going back to the 1950s for that sort of level of interest in rugby league in Bradford. So I think that when you put a full stop on that, it does come as a huge shock.
Phil, there's a lot of redundancies behind the scenes, but in terms of the playing staff, what will happen to them? Will they just go to other clubs?
All of the playing staff were immediately made free agents by that decision. So I think there were some of there. It's like everything at any sporting club. There are some who will be on the radar of other clubs straight away, and I wouldn't be surprised if we get the first couple of announcements today of where some of those players are moving to. There's some talented youngsters. Obviously, I think they will go into systems in other clubs. There's a dispensation now because we're 4 weeks away from the season starting, and most clubs in this salary cap sport have spent the money that they've got available, but they can now take on these extra Bradford players that are on the market without it appearing on their salary cap. If they're overseas players, then they're not going to count on the overseas quota either. So the talented players will definitely move on. Your worry at this stage, I think, are for those who are on the fringes and for those who are in the academy and scholarship system, that they're the ones, I think, whose future is uncertain by this decision.
There's so many questions unanswered about this, Phil. And looking at this now, I mean, I'm wondering how much of the blame of this can be put at the feet of the RFL. Did they take their eye off the ball with the Bulls?
It's a really interesting question, and somebody should be accountable for what's gone on, not just in this process, but the fact that this was the third administration in 4 years. It's happened twice before at Bradford. In 1907, the original Bradford FC club became Bradford Northern, and then in 1963, Bradford Northern was resurrected after they'd gone into liquidation. So this is the third time it's happened in Bradford. So there is historical precedent for it, but for it to have been such a malingering sore for so long, for three different owners to pass a fit and proper test, that has to raise questions, I think, of actually how stringent that test is, how much due diligence is done, and also, subsequent to that, why players are allowed to be signed when winding up petitions are in place. why squad, the RFL cannot micromanage clubs in the same way that you wouldn't expect the Football Association to, or the Rugby Union, or the English Cricket Board. There has to be an element of an owner has to run their own business. But I think if you can see things that are palpably going wrong, then there has to be mechanisms where you step in and say, look, there's an embargo on transfers, we need to see detailed accounts that haven't been filed for long enough. We supposedly have a live salary cap, even though I'm not sure it ever can be, and there seem to be issues here about, you know, how you can have a squad of 40-odd players. So I think there are issues that the RFL do need to be accountable for. The other thing that I don't think has ever been fully explained, and there may be a proper explanation for it, is they obviously stepped in and bought the lease to Oddsall. Now, I'm not sure that they ever made it absolutely 100% clear why they were doing that. Now, if it was to preserve the history and the heritage and tradition of rugby in Bradford, then at the moment they've got a lease and no rugby team. So something's gone wrong somewhere. If it was to stop there being development of the ground at the expense of rugby, well, at the moment the lease is the only thing that has an asset value. So I think all of these questions do need answering. My again, disappointment yesterday was that there wasn't a press conference. There wasn't anybody from the RFL who said, right, this is what's happened, this is where we stand, this is the method of going forward. We actually just had two press releases that almost said, well, the old Bulls have gone, but don't worry, because we've already allocated a space in the Championship next season for the new Bulls, but they'll have to start with a 12-point deduction. That immediately raised a social media storm about the integrity of that decision, on what basis it had been made. Normally, if a club goes into liquidation, then it starts at the bottom of a pyramid rather than remains in the middle. It sounded extremely expedient because it basically said, oh, we're about to start a new season, so it'd just be too much hassle to change everything at this stage. And then you start looking at the implications for a potential new Bradford club starting in that division with that kind of a noose already around its neck. And you begin to think, well, actually, avoiding relegation would be a major issue. Why would you invest in 2017 when in 2018 you may well be in the position of being in League One, which is perhaps where you should be when you reform a club? So there are a lot of questions. At this stage, I'm not sure it does a huge amount of good to lay blame, but there should be a full investigation.
You picked up on a really a big point there, because the RFL, this sort of sets a precedent, doesn't it? Because you can now sort of think, well, if any club in the Super League goes bust, well, they'll remain in the Super League. Because if Bradford have done this in the Championship, they've remained in the Championship. This is a pretty scary precedent that the RFL are making here.
But it isn't even a precedent, because in 2005, exactly that happened to London Broncos. And they went into liquidation and 4 days later were playing again in Super League with the points that they'd accrued, and ironically were playing at Bradford in the first game of their new guys. And I think the danger is that we don't have statutes that say when this happens, the corollary is that. What we do is say, well, we'll have a look at it now. We'll make up what's best for us at the moment. The statement that came out said the Rugby League board that met yesterday had decided it was in the best interest of the game that Bradford stayed in the Championship. Well, I don't know who they consulted with. Did they talk to the clubs in League One and ask if any of those were prepared to take on Bradford's fixtures, just do a fixture swap? In whose interests actually are they acting? Should there have been an emergency meeting of the full Rugby League Council, which is every club, and gone round the table and said, look, we have this issue with Bradford. If in our statutes we're allowed to do effectively whatever we want that we think is in the best interest of the game, as a group that run the game, what do we think is in the best interest? To me, it always smacks of expediency, and that's the day. It's not the precedent so much. It's, well, we're here on this day, in this moment, with this problem, and we'll solve it this way. But we won't necessarily do it that way the next time this happens.
And I imagine a number of League One clubs will be saying to themselves, here, what's going on here? Why they are being allowed to be reinstated? Why are we not getting promoted? I'd imagine be a few, not angry, maybe just a few chairmen just wanting to know what the script is.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, because there is a chasm between part-time rugby league and full-time rugby league. And Bradford were a full-time club, and you would be asking a part-time club to take their place. Two or three Bradford players are on the market. If they wanted to sign for a League One club, then already you're looking at similar strength. But you have only got 3 or 4 weeks to do the logistics of being in a different division. That's not easy. But then, and I know we shouldn't compare sports because they're not like for like, you'll know closely what happened to Rangers.
I was going to mention that, Phil, yeah.
Well, at very short notice, they were dropped from the Scottish Premier League down to the third division, and the sport accommodated that. Now, I suspect it would have been in the Scottish Premier League club's interest, and maybe even in Scottish football's interest, for Rangers to remain in the top division, because very much like rugby league in terms of structure, there aren't many big-name, big-city, large attendance-drawing clubs, and you really need to keep them together. So it would have made sense, from a sporting point of view, for Rangers to play in the Scottish Premier League, even though they were a new club. But the clubs themselves decided that it would be fair and just if they started at the bottom. They didn't have, I don't think, more than maybe a couple of weeks' notice to arrange all that. And it happened. And the Rangers fans took on board the fact that they were starting from the bottom. They took huge a fan base to a lot of community clubs. I can remember there were sellouts at small places that were never used to seeing large travelling fan bases. And it sort of worked, and Rangers regenerated themselves through the divisions. And everybody seemed to think that that was an honest way of restarting the club. This is where I think there's been almost a quantum leap from saying, well, yeah, Bradford have gone, but Bradford are coming back. And I'm not sure that explanation has been fully made as to why it's been done that way by the powers that be.
Yeah, a lot of the Rangers supporters wanted to start life in the bottom tier. They felt that was the way to go. I think it was talks at the time the SFA wanted Rangers for some bizarre reason to hand back trophies they felt they'd cheated their way to, and they said, no, we're not having that. We'll go back to the bottom tier of Scottish football. And like you say there, Phil, I think that would be the best bet. I think the Bradford Bulls supporters should have a say in it as well, because I'm sure they would want to start at the bottom tier. I don't think they would feel comfortable with the fact that they've just been reinstated in the championship.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, Phil? That we're just, you know, you feel about the fans in this. Those people, those 600 people that shelled out for season tickets aren't going to see their money back.
Well, I think they will. I think part of the agreement with any new owner will be that they honour any season tickets that have been bought. I'm pretty sure that they wouldn't get a licence if that wasn't a stipulation. And you have to carry that group of fans with you, because if you alienate them once more, and let's not forget the Bradford fans were astonishing at putting £500,000 into the club when it was asked for, that went into a huge black hole a couple of years ago. I don't think you can penalise the fans. What I don't understand from a rugby playing point of view is, if you're a supporter of a club and you're starting on minus 12 points and you're going into a division where that minus 12 points will at the very best see you try and emerge from a relegation battle, Where is the point of actually going along to witness a further demise of something that you hold so dear? Would you not be better with that minus 12 points in League One, where you can probably win, with the greatest respect to some of the clubs that are in there, at least half of your games, even if you only keep half of the squad you've got at the moment, and you've actually got something to support and follow and regenerate? I can't think of anything worse as a Bradford fan, having suffered all of this, to then go through a complete season where the best you can hope for is to not be relegated. That's not regeneration.